Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
Every Thursday, we check in at the city of Bloomington, and it is City Hall today. It's the deputy mayor's office, and it's our great friend Mick Renheisen. Mick, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and it's very appropriate that turning the calendar to October 1st, the weather's changing, the leaves are changing. There's a whole lot of things I'd like to share about the changing seasons and what it means for activity levels, including, drum roll please, there will be Halloween.
Okay. Well, breaking news.
Yep.
Get the tippity drums out, Keith.
Yeah, the kids will love you.
Well, the County Health Department has determined that we should be following CDC regulations, but that does allow for trick-or-treating in the traditional sense. However, it is still considered a high-risk activity. The hours are 5 to 8 o'clock on October 31st. If you, as a household, wish to participate, you just turn your porch light on so trick-or-treaters know, and if you don't, then they'll assume they should go on to the next house that you're not interested in participating. You still need to wear a mask, and I don't mean the one you're wearing as a costume.
Or the one I just wear around town.
Or that one. That would be a third mask. But you do need to wear your face covering along with any costume that you wear. Of course, all the other CDC guidelines, which are on their website. If you want to look now, parents that are planning ahead, you have 30 days to plan ahead, knowing that you may participate in traditional Halloween activities, but know that it's a high-risk activity. Again, 5 to 8 are the hours. Turn your light on if you want to participate. Leave it off if you don't.
And you can find all of those wonderful guidelines. I'm pretty sure if you go to coronavirus.in.gov, Dr. Box was showing those yesterday. So they will get you started. That's an easy place to go and find it because we want everyone to know this. Mick, 4 weeks ago, we weren't playing Big Ten football. We weren't even going to revisit the idea. 4 weeks later, we are playing Big Ten football. Halloween is 30 days from now. I mean, I could be really, really positive and upbeat on what could happen 30 days from now. But we live in the now, and that's part of what's going on here. So it's great to hear that it's a, quote, high-risk activity today. But hopefully, if as a community we can keep our numbers moving in the right direction, who knows what we're going to be 30 days from now?
No, that's right. And we are moving in the right direction. And that's a good sign. And so that doesn't mean let up or let your guard down or change your behaviors. It just means keep doing what you're doing because it's working. Wear your mask, stay socially distant, try to minimize your contact with people indoors, particularly as we get colder weather, as the weather changes and it gets rainy and sleety and all those other nasty things that'll come with the changing seasons coming up. You know, we're going to be indoors more, and that's going to be a concern and could spread the virus again and could give us another outbreak. So I really want to commend the community for the response to this and just hope we can stick with it. If we do that, we can enjoy some other fall events that I want to mention because, you know, these haven't been things that people have been able to participate in. Some of these are modified events that have obviously COVID protocols, but I do want to run through real quickly some things people, families, individuals can participate in the month of October that are going on that, you know, maybe give you a chance to go out and enjoy the outdoors a little bit longer while the weather's as nice as we know it can be in Indiana fall. So first of all, the Saturday market, the hours change from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So 9 o'clock through 1 o'clock beginning this weekend. Now, the next thing you should be aware of if you're interested in a weekend activity on October 2nd, you can go to the Ryder Film Series presentation of the movie Young Frankenstein in Bryant Park. Remember, this is a free event, but you have to reserve a ticket in advance. And you can call Parks at 812-349-3700 or fill out an online form at bloomington.in.gov/parks so you can reserve your socially distant space for you and your family. That's Young Frankenstein on Friday. There's also the pumpkin launch, the annual pumpkin launch, where we have our creative engineers that create launchers and see how far they can throw a pumpkin. And
you know, Keith and I have signed up to be pumpkin catchers for the last decade, and no one has ever called us back.
Uh-huh. That is a high, talking about high risk activities.
That's right.
both for your skill sets and because the velocity of some of these devices is pretty incredible.
Well, I can't get to where the pumpkin's coming down fast enough.
Well, that's we could drive you around there. But no, that is fun. The Great Pumpkin Lot. That's at the Monroe County Fairgrounds, Mick. Is that accurate?
That is where it has been, and it doesn't say on my little cheat sheet here, but it is Saturday, October 24th. Registration fee for launchers is $25 per six-person team in the adult, college, high school, student, or youth category. And again, go to the Bloomington Parks website or call them at 349-3700 for more information there.
Mick, do you guys provide the pumpkin so it's a standard size pumpkin? Or
no.
Do I bring my own pumpkins for that?
BYOP.
Yeah, you gotta calibrate all that.
So it's just how far it goes. There's no prize per se.
There's a distance
prize.
For accuracy at a target.
Okay. So would a lighter pumpkin go farther than a heavier one?
He's the deputy mayor. He's not an engineer,
but
Keith, for crying out loud.
He was in charge of this for a long time.
I have people that knew how to do that and still do.
If you want to know how to hit a 7-iron, ask him that. But he's not going to tell you how to launch a pumpkin.
I'm not even sure.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, Renheisen wears a lot of hats, but he doesn't have time to be firing the catapult in his backyard, for crying out loud.
I bet he's got a few tips on that.
He knows where to go.
He
knows where to go. He threw it
away. I do know where to refer you. That is a fair statement. So anyway, those are some upcoming things that people I know enjoy. Maybe you were thinking or asking, are these events going to happen? Two more just to mention: a kids' Halloween party in the park on October 10th. This is replacing the annual Parks Trick or Treat Trail event. So October 10th, there'll be a costume event, which will take place on the lawn in front of the main stage at Switchyard Park. So using the new park facility. Gates will open at 6 o'clock that day. Admission to the kids' Halloween party is $5 a child. Adults are actually admitted free. Children will get a craft activity bag and a candy bag upon their admission. So some fun things to do, to plan for on the coming weekends. And then one more at the Banneker Community Center. And it's modified its normal event and replaced it. Instead of being in person, the not so scary Halloween party will be a not so scary Halloween activity box that families can take the best of the Not So Scary Halloween party home. You can purchase an event activity box for $10 and receive some activities, coloring book, treats, and more. And that activity is geared for ages 3 to 10. Families can again call the Parks Department for information about all these cool upcoming events, some of them slightly modified, to give you and your family something to do to enjoy this wonderful fall season.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, is our guest this afternoon. He calls, the sun comes out. See, Keith,
that's
he
right.
has wonderful powers, and that's not from the old catapult either. Mick, some interesting developments this afternoon. I don't know if you've been following along. Three more fraternities at Indiana University have been ordered to cease and desist. I wouldn't think that would come as a surprise because the local health department obviously is probably in charge of that in one way or another. I'll give you the quote here: are being investigated, and the cease and desist is for violating public health regulations and restrictions. So our numbers are good, but we still have some groups that aren't perhaps following along. My larger point is, you talk about these events and everything else that's going on. We now hear that Indiana University is going to have some concert series in Dunn Meadow. I don't know. I mean, we had some Lotus stuff, and we, being the city, had some. And I'm in the city. I'm not part of the city. Well, I guess I am part of it. Anyhow, the Lotus Fest stuff is going on. Are we just trying to inch our way back into this to be safe? The concerts on Indiana University's Dunn Meadow is for students only. I guess we got to come out of our shell at some point.
Well, I think all these things are doable if people practice the protocols that by now, 6.5 months into this, we have learned are effective. And we don't want to make people feel like they're caged up and can't go outside, can't do anything. It's just, you just have to take the proper precaution. So I think that we're all, inching is a good word, Mike, to see if we can do some of these things safely. If people will practice the protocols that have been in place, that they're manageable. And obviously these are events that have supervision and oversight and people in charge that can watch for a violation, as opposed to just some random event that happens. That makes them a little bit more controllable, if you will. And again, I want to commend most of our residents, including students, are doing a good job. The outliers, like you just mentioned, that don't think it applies to them, we're always going to have that in society. We just need to, and I'm credit the university for taking quick action. I saw Purdue did that. They didn't mess around with a party that had some athletes and some students in it, and they just didn't tolerate it. And I think that's what we have to do is send the message. It's, you're not immune from it. You put other people at risk. Please don't do that. And we can all have some sense of normalcy in our lives, but we have to try some of these things in safe environments that are being provided.
Yes. So we can party, but we have to party, responsibly, and in public, so we can see everybody is.
You can't party like it's 1999.
Well, you can. Right. You can just do it once, and that's the issue. And you know, as Prince once remarked, life is like a party, and parties aren't meant to last. That's how it goes. And we're trying to be safe in doing this, but that's what's going on. So don't panic, I guess, is what Keith and I are trying to point out to people. These are organized events. These are hopefully quote-unquote social distanced events. I can't speak for anybody hosting these. But if you drive by Dunn Meadow, coming up this Friday, it's Clayton Anderson. In 2 weeks, it is Huckleberry Hound, did we say?
Huckleberry Funk.
Just so everybody is aware, and your phone doesn't ring all night long, Mick. That's another song, All Night Long.
Well, who wrote the key statement that I like that you made there is these are controlled events, right? So if people are going to have events that are uncontrolled, that's where we have the risk of spread. That's where we have the unsupervised, no one wants to be the adult in the room to take control of it. These events are being managed by organizations that understand what it takes to put these on safely. So I do feel like we can do these, particularly when they're being structured like they are, as long as people follow the program.
And obviously there are more than 15 people, so you have to go through the county, you have to fill out all the paperwork, you have to show the plan, et cetera, et cetera. It's just not we're taking your word for it. So these should be safer than I would think some people assume.
I agree with you.
We're speaking with Mick Renneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And Mick, you mentioned it, but let's go into it because I don't want people to lose sight of what you've already mentioned. We did a little story on it. We're doing one tomorrow, too, that the farmer's market time has changed. It's going to start an hour later, and primarily because
it's dark, baby.
Yeah. So we got a time change coming up here, too. So those kinds of things. This is nothing unusual. This happens every year.
That's right. This is just a normal change of the season from this time of year to the end of the season. We're just moving. It's cooler in the morning, obviously at 8 o'clock, and it is darker. So we're just making a little shift that's pretty normal for the farmers market.
How's it doing so far? We started up and we haven't heard very much.
Does it matter how it's doing? I think that's more an interesting question.
How well it's going.
Exactly. But does it matter how well it does, Mick?
Well, that's a good question as well. And as I've stated, and from my past history with parks, I know that the Parks Department will evaluate this program as they do every program every year to see if it is serving the needs of the community, if it needs to be modified, or if it's time for it to be phased out. And all those are options for any service that's delivered by the Parks Department, or for that matter, at some level that even the city in my role today, we look at those things. Like, are we just doing something that there's not enough reasons to continue to do it? It has come, its time has come and gone. So the market still has 1,500 to 1,700 people on a regular basis in COVID conditions. So that is not bad. It's not, it's not the peak of what the market was in the heyday in the summer several years ago, but it's not serving no one, right? It's a still a significant number of people are coming and using the service. Parks Department at the end of the year will survey the vendors to see if it's meeting their needs, and the customers and the staff will thoughtfully consider what should be done next year. And that's what we'll do, is wait till the end of the year to do that evaluation.
Is that pre-ordering thing working still well? The people order before the actual market, then just go and pick it up?
That's right. We have a combination of that option, and then people can come in and be socially distanced and let into the market so many at a time. So obviously that's picked up once we were able to allow people to shop somewhat normally by coming to the market without a predetermined list of what you wanted to buy. That's worked as well. And actually the numbers for that have outpaced the pre-orders now, and that's been that way for a while. So both methodologies are still available. Both seem to be being used heavily enough that we wouldn't discontinue one or the other right now.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot with this question, and I don't care if you numbers, but how are we doing in the city with the number of people who are working from home versus on site, those kinds of things. The kind of the specter of normalcy in what we usually had and what we have now.
Yeah, that's a fair and good question. When the COVID protocols were put in place and our continuity of city government team put together our plan for how we would operate under these conditions, and obviously, you know, the state has changed its emergency and it's stage one, and now we're in stage five in the state, not locally, just to remind everybody, the county and the city are in their own phase and it's not five. So we're doing the things that we've known that have worked well in the last month or so, and we're going to continue to do that for the foreseeable future. At the city, about half of our employees have always been working in the field. And you can imagine we have about 100 law enforcement officers. We have about 100 firefighters. They can't do their job anywhere else but in their normal location. So there's 200 of our 750 employees that are coming in just as they always would. There's another 120 to 40 folks that work in various physical or maintenance related, whether they're maintaining streets or sidewalks or traffic signals or utilities infrastructure, patching, you know, fixing water mains and those kind of things. And they too have been coming in. We've altered shift schedules a little bit to try to minimize contact. We've done some modifications in the workforce to try to minimize their contact and give them some room to do their jobs as safely as we possibly can make it. So I would say in adding all those together, about half of our workforce, their work hasn't changed much at all. Other than those modifications that we've made to try to keep them physically distanced and not gathering. Of course, we've given them all the PPE that they need to make sure that they, when they are working in close proximity, they can protect each other. Then about the rest of the workforce, I'd say about 25% of them are coming in to staff physically in office location. Again, physically distanced, less people in their normal office environments than normal. And then the rest of that, which would be maybe 200 or so or less people, are working in some combination, either remotely from home or some combination of I come in some days of the week and I work from home some days of the week. So that's how we've managed our way to date. And I suspect we'll stay in this practice for the balance of the year. And there's no magic to the end of the year. We're going to watch the triggers like everyone else. You know, we don't have a red, green, yellow stage like Monroe County Schools. Keith, I know you're involved in that. That's great, very visual, very helpful for families to know what's going to change this dynamic for me as a family with my child in school. For our workers, our workforce, we're going to really be watching the trends of COVID infectious rate going down and a vaccine. And so there's no known vaccine coming soon or any distribution. So I think we're in this type of environment, work environment, certainly through the end of the year, maybe well into next year. We just don't know. We'll watch those triggers. And I do want to say this, city's never closed for business this entire time.
Right.
We've modified how we serve the community. We've learned some great new ways to do things that may in fact be things that we'll do in the future because some of it's more efficient. A lot of our meetings on Zoom are getting way more attendance from the public. Public engagement is up dramatically from, you know, you have to slog your way into City Hall and come to the city council chambers to attend a meeting. No, you don't. Do it on Zoom. So I know we're going to learn from this and take some of the good things and continue those when we return to whatever normal looks like coming out of this.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, is our guest this afternoon. He joins us every Thursday after 4:05. And next Tuesday, Mick, is another opportunity to participate via Zoom. It is the big hospital. Oh, geez, what are we calling this here? Site redevelopment. It's the third public forum, and it's coming up next Tuesday at 6:00.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. That I'm so excited about this project. I mean, maybe because I'm heavily involved as a reason, but I just think for our community, the chance to redevelop 24 acres in the near downtown that's been one purpose for 100 years is a once in a more than a lifetime opportunity. And I mean that not for me personally, but for the community. You get to redesign and redevelop to whatever we need today and for the next 100 years, 24 acres of ground. And so our community has been great about participating. Some of those tools we were just talking about, the Zoom calls, and we've had Zoom breakout rooms. We've had over 200 people participate on one meeting of the last two that we've had as public forums. We've had over 300 people put in survey results. As we've refined the plans, we've surveyed the community and we've gotten feedback. The distribution of where people are commenting from We've got a map on our website that shows it's not just around the hospital site. It's all over the community. People realize, hey, I may not live there now, but I may want to live there, or I may want to shop there, or I may want to open a business there when it's redeveloped. I have an interest in it. So if you have an interest in it, participate in our Zoom meeting on Tuesday, October 6th from 6 to 8 o'clock. We want to hear your opinion. Go to our website, bloomingtonhospitalsite.com. All the archival information we've collected so far is on there, including updated renderings of the site plan as it's developing. And that's what we'll be looking at next Tuesday with the community's input.
And it's the third one, Mick. Are we going to do 4, 5, 10, 37? How many more of these are there? So if people are thinking, well, I'll just wait till the next one. Well, is there going to be one?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. We will have a fourth event, and it will be public, and it will likely be close to the end of the year, not around the holidays, of course, but at a time when there are enough people not celebrating other things so that they can participate. We'll likely be kind of a here's what we think the final, not final, final plan, but here's what we think is the right thing to do. We've had three public forums. We've had hundreds of people participate in surveys. And we've given the community a pretty ample chance to weigh in. And here's what we think is the right thing moving forward. That's going to have to go before the Redevelopment Commission, before the City Council. So there'll be more public review of it. But our goal is to wrap it up towards the end of the year so that we can start then looking for development partners to start engaging with to try to actually get the project ready to get off the ground. And that's not going to happen until the hospital moves, of course. But having some time to prepare for all of those things is going to be important. So one more bite of the apple that's really important is next Tuesday, and then some reveal with some feedback on that final plan at the end of the year is our plan at this moment.
All right, so there we go. You have your timeline on everything that's happening over there. Keith, it looks like it's raining. The trees are blowing all over the place. Is it raining? A drip here, a drop there.
I didn't see any windshield wipers or anything
else. All right,
else.
It's blowing around downtown. Yeah. So hang on to your hats. What else is on our list of things to do for Deputy Mayor Renhuizen? Do we have
that? Was it?
That's it. We're covered. All right. So that means
we're ready for.
Oh,
are we going to be the Cincinnati?
It's
of
a, oh, geez, don't jinx it, Keith. We had a really good month of September, and it's a brand new month, and I bet Celeste is licking her chops, saying, "I have sucked these two candy eating fat boys right into my trap here," and it is raining in downtown Bloomington. It's coming down. So, grab an umbrella. And who knows how long it will last. Mick, is it accurate? Do we have trivia today, or have we put Celeste into submission?
No, she has trivia. She's always coming up with something. So your topic this week is CDFIs, also standing for Community Development Finance Institution.
The mayor talked about that Tuesday.
Oh, and I paid attention.
And that's the reason the mayor participated in a panel discussion hosted by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York about the success of the city CDFI-friendly program, which is going very well. Thank you. This week's trivia is all about CDFIs or community.
You know, it's never about the PGA Tour or PGATour.com, I've noticed.
We can make that happen. I mean, I might have to write those. I don't know if Celeste would be as interested as you and I might be, but I might write those.
Oh, no, we're doing great. We're doing great. All right, so I'm just trying to get to the end of this, see if we can run out the time on the Zoom call, Keith, just in case October goes in the wrong direction.
Well, I've answered the first question already. So what does CDFI stand for?
Oh, good.
Oh, Community Foundation Development, CDFI.
Community Development Financial Institution, something like that.
Initiatives.
Well, Keith, I kind of have to give, I don't know if the Jeopardy host would give you the answer, because Glass got it right. Community Development Financial Institution.
Institution.
And you kind of, initiative, I think, is the way you ended it. So yes. I don't know if that's a, what do you say, Judge? Glass, you get to be the judge. Does that count?
I'm searching for the ding feature on my board here. Yes, we're good.
All right.
Play on, says the referee.
So just to give you a little history, delight. Celeste likes to put in here the little delightful trivial elements. So CDFIs helped to address the housing crisis in the 2008 recession by acting as home loan banks. So there's a little trivia about why CDFIs are relevant, why they're important, why we wanted to have one here. Which federal government department certifies CDFIs? Is it the Department of Interior, the Department of Defense, the State Department, or the Department of the Treasury?
Treasury.
I think it has to be Treasury because he was talking about the New York Fed on Tuesday and how that was a big deal.
The mayor will be pleased to know you both listened
to that information.
Absolutely.
You got it right. You got it right. CDFIs were first federally established in a 1994 bill. And your final question, which former City of Bloomington employee is now the head of CDFI-friendly Bloomington? Is it former Mayor Mark Cruzan, Terry Porter, our former planning director who just retired? Congratulations, Terry. Brian Payne, or former Mayor Tamalia Allison? Who is the current CDFI friendly?
I remembered you.
I am thinking Brian Payne.
I thought Terry Porter retired join her.
She and her husband both retired together.
And they were planning on that. And I'm gonna. Stay with my gut. I don't think Brian Payne does something with that. But not maybe with that, but does something in that general area. I'm going to stay with the former Indiana University cornerback, Terry Porter. Oh, that's Tracy Porter. Wait a second.
Terry Porter
played for the Portland Trailblazers with Clyde Drexler and Jerome Kersey.
Yes, that's very good.
Let's do that one. I'll take Terry Porter.
All right, well, it's Brian Payne.
Oh, right, good job, Keith. 3 for 3 for Keith.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Brian served as the
you.
Assistant Director for Small Business Development in the city's Economic and Sustainable Development Department and then became the CDFI Director about a year and a half ago, I think is about right, somewhere in that vicinity.
Fantastic.
As well. So there you go. CDFIs, and you know what they're here for, right? They're mm-hmm. helping.
Well, and Bloomington's leading the way on that. That they were actually looking at Bloomington, according to what the mayor said, because of the leadership that was shown here.
We are an unusually small market. Most of these are in big cities. And so we're lucky that the mayor had a lot of background in that from mm-hmm. his previous life. So that was a big priority of his. And Brian's doing a good job getting going, along with some great local partners that have helped help us as well get it established. And it's helping. It's making a difference in our community.
Excellent job, as always.
By the way,
Mick.
What golf course is he at in that background?
Let me pull. I got to check and see here. That would be – that is not Kapalua. It's the Bay course, isn't it? Or the other one. It's not Kapalua. It's not the one the tour plays at, correct?
It's correct. It is the Bay course.
It is the Bay course. You know how you can tell, Keith? All the houses.
Oh, yeah. Okay, way back in there.
Yeah,
okay,
because
okay.
Kapalua is a huge piece of property, and you can see a couple houses on Kapalua, but that's a pretty nice view there. You got it looks like number 8 at Pebble Beach, doesn't it? Or number 7 with the cutout?
Yeah, this is a little par 3 that's about 165 yards over a little carved out inlet from the ocean right there. So it's pretty much all carry. The wind's blowing hard.
The beaches in the background, the perfect blue water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is that hole? Is that 5 on the front at Pebble Beach that has the big cut?
7 that goes out into the ocean and 8 that goes over the ravine, par 4.
8 is the ravine, right, where Tiger hit that great shot to like 12 feet
in
2000. I knew what it was. I'm not sure which one it was. And you know what, Mick, this is since you've been joining us on this program and we've been nothing but thankful for it, this has been your longest stretch without a break. I hope you're getting a fall break at some point because you didn't get to go where you normally go earlier and in some other places, and we're all hoping to get back to normal. How about Asheville? Have you been contacted about Asheville for the Maui Jim Asheville Classic or whatever they're going to call it now?
We have.
Oh, good.
He's to be contacted and we'll be the stat crew for the Maui Invitational in Asheville. So we're just beginning to sort of prepare for what that likes. Apparently it'll be a bubble. And so I'll be able to tell you what the bubble experience feels like after the event. And I don't know what it'll be quite like yet. So we are looking forward to continuing our 25 now. This will be our 26th year of being the stat crew for the Maui Invitational. But the first time that it won't be in Maui in the history of the 37 years of the event.
Mick, a weather update. I don't know if you have a window or not, but the streets are officially wet from rain.
Let's get somebody out there to clean it. We'll call Wason. Get somebody out there to mop this up. Mick, the other question I have for you, and I don't know if you have the answer to it just yet, is we know at Lahaina Civic Center in Maui, the gym was bustling all day because it was just one gym. Are they going to use multiple gyms, or is it going to be the same kind of format where you guys show up at 8:30 and go home at 8:30?
That's a good question as well. I do not have those details. I know that at the Lahaina Civic Center, they share practice times over the course of the day, and actually some of the teams practice in other venues just to get them time to do things on their schedules. And I just don't know enough about the Asheville setup yet. But as I learn more, I'd be happy to share it because
it's fascinating.
Hey, something interesting to talk about, another COVID-related modification that at least allows us to have the event, at least allows the teams to participate in it, at least allows the fans to watch it on TV. So that's, you know, I think we'll take all that in today's environment.
Absolutely.
Having that.
And because just like the NBA did, they had practice gyms and game gyms, you're going to have the same thing in Asheville. It's just not going to be a one facility type deal. And no fans in the stands there? We're not sure. I'm pretty sure that we're not sure.
I think that's the understanding at the moment. But
and we're
again,
so far away. That's we joked Halloween's 4 weeks. Yeah, it's 8 weeks away before we do any of that. Well, it's great you're invited. That's the good news. So that keeps that streak alive. And
yeah, very, very happy. Very excited about that. And look, you ask about getting away. And well, my wife and I were just talking about that. Like we have hardly anything to complain about. We don't have the same. Everybody's got their own stresses with the COVID pandemic, and thankfully we don't feel like we have as many as other people. So not being able to go someplace as beautiful as Hawaii, I'm not going to complain. I'm just glad that you know, family is safe and healthy, and we are fortunate to be in the condition that we are in. And I know there are families struggling way more than we are, so I'm certainly not going to complain about things that we aren't being able to do right now. But I do hope that people who are listening are finding respite from this, finding ways to take care of yourself and your mental health and your physical health. It's tough. 6.5 months of this is a drain on everyone. And I hope you're finding ways to, that's why I gave you all these fun things to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. And you can go to the city's website to look up all the other things that are going on with Parks and Rec. Just go to Switchyard Park and walk around and think about it for an hour.
You can do that any day for free.
And that's for free, exactly. If you don't like it, you double your money back. That's how that works. Great job as always, Mr. Renheisen. We appreciate your time, and we will talk to you next Thursday. Have a great start to your October, a great weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Mick.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.